All right, everyone, welcome back to the Lex Blug Deep Dive. Ever thought about how something as, I don't know, basic as a MySpace message could actually end up as evidence in a murder case? Or maybe even like if saying you understand your Miranda rights is enough, even if you don't sign the form.
It's pretty interesting, right?
Yeah, it is. And that's actually exactly what we're going to be unpacking today with Commonwealth v. Williams,
The ethical one.
a Massachusetts case that went all the way up to their Supreme Judicial Court back in 2010. And if you want to look it up yourself, the citation's 456 Mass 857. So this case, it really dives into all these super relevant issues about digital evidence, constitutional rights, you name it. And we're going to be using this case to really understand how courts look at these issues, you know, the Miranda stuff, authentication of digital stuff, and also what happens when a trial has some errors, but the conviction is still upheld. That whole harmless error thing.
Exactly. I mean, think about it. Commonwealth v. Williams is like the perfect example of how criminal procedure and evidence law get all tangled
Oh,
up,
for sure.
especially in like the digital age, right?
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is, well, pretty much all the time now. So throughout this deep dive, we're going to be digging into Miranda waivers, how you actually prove digital evidence is legit.
Yeah.
I mean, remember, we're talking about MySpace here,
Oh, yeah.
a real blast from the past. And of course, we can't forget about harmless error because on appeal, that can make or break a case.
Absolutely. So today, our goal is to walk you through, you know, the listener, how the court in Massachusetts tackled these really tricky legal questions.
Right.
We've gone through the actual case documents, some really interesting legal analyses to bring you all the important bits. So let's start with the basics. You know, what happened that even led to this appeal? Like, what was the actual crime here?
Well, we're dealing with a murder conviction. Dwight Williams was convicted of first-degree murder. The victim was Iza Tucker. And the prosecution, well, they built their case using a few different things. Eyewitness testimony, for one.
Oh, of course.
And also testimony from some folks who were hanging around with Williams close to when the murder happened.
Okay, makes sense. And I think this is where it starts to get really relevant for all of us, especially thinking about the digital age,
Yeah.
because the prosecution also used some MySpace messages. They
Nice.
were saying these came from Williams's brother. And it's like, you know, it takes us back to how social media was used in courts back in the day.
Totally. A total throwback, right?
Yeah, it's wild.
But yeah, using MySpace messages, the Commonwealth argued for that first-degree murder conviction, bringing in ideas of both premeditation and extreme atrocity, or cruelty, depending on how you want to look at it.
Wow. Okay, so that was at the trial, right?
Yeah.
But then after he was convicted, Williams, he appealed to the highest court in Massachusetts, their
Yeah.
Supreme Judicial Court. And he brought up some, I mean, some serious challenges to his conviction. So, can you break down those main arguments for us? What were Williams' lawyers really focusing on?
Well, the first one, and probably the biggest one, was about his Miranda rights. See, Williams, he refused to sign that Miranda waiver form, but he still talked to the police. So his argument was that his Miranda rights had been violated.
Right.
Then there was the whole issue of those MySpace messages. They argued about whether they were even admissible in court, you know, whether they were actually authentic.
Okay, yeah.
And then they also brought up problems with the gun evidence that was used in the trial and said that the judge might have been biased.
But let's unpack that Miranda thing a bit more. It's like Miranda is one of the most important topics in criminal law, right?
It is, absolutely.
But it's not always so straightforward. You
Yeah.
know, in this case, Williams, he didn't sign that waiver, but he still talked to the police. So how did the court go about analyzing that?
Yeah, that's the thing about Miranda. It's not just a box you check. The court doesn't just look at the form. They use what's called the totality of the circumstances test. It's a really important concept. Basically, they look at everything that happened, the whole picture, to decide if Williams knowingly and voluntarily waived his rights.
So it's not just about a signature on a piece of paper,
No,
right?
not at all.
So for someone listening, trying to get this, like a law student who's new to this, what were the specific things that the court considered in Williams's case? What made them decide that he had waived his Miranda rights even though he didn't sign?
Okay, so they looked at a bunch of factors. First off, they saw that Williams had been arrested before.
Oh, okay.
So he probably knew how things worked with the police and Miranda warnings. The court records also showed he was given those warnings, like multiple times before he ever started talking.
Right.
And even though he didn't sign, he did say out loud that he understood his rights.
Okay, so that's important.
Yeah. Plus, the court looked at how he acted during the whole thing. He started conversations with the officers. He accepted things like drinks that they offered him. All of that suggested that he was choosing to talk to them.
Interesting. So The key takeaway here, it seems like, is that just because you don't sign the Miranda waiver doesn't mean everything you say is automatically thrown out.
Exactly. What you say and do, along with everything else that's happening, it all matters. Yeah. It's all part of that big picture.
That makes a lot of sense. And it kind of highlights how, like, you know, the law has to adapt to real life situations. It's not just about this one strict rule. It's about looking at the whole context.
Absolutely. In fact, the court even said straight up that a refusal to sign a Miranda form doesn't preclude an oral waiver. So for all you legal eagles out there, you got to remember what really matters is whether the person understands their rights and chooses to talk, not just whether they put pen to paper.
Right. And that's a great reminder to think about how this applies in different situations, you know, not just this one case. Okay, let's move on to those MySpace messages. I mean, MySpace, it might feel like ancient history to some people now, but this part of the case brings up some really important and honestly timeless questions about how we make sure digital evidence is legit. So what exactly was the main issue with these messages in the appeal?
Well, here's where it gets interesting. The Supreme Judicial Court, they actually disagreed with what the trial court did.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. They said that those MySpace messages, they weren't authenticated properly and shouldn't have been used as evidence.
Oh, okay.
And this gets at a huge problem in our legal system, right? How do we know that digital stuff presented in court is actually reliable and true?
That's such a good point, because digital stuff, I mean, it can be changed. It can be faked. So, yeah, how do we know it's real? So what was the standard that the prosecution, the Commonwealth in this case, had to meet to actually prove those MySpace messages were real? What were they missing that made the higher court say, nope, not good enough?
It's not enough to just show a message with a username. Mm-hmm. You need way more than that. The problem was the Commonwealth, they didn't give any proof of who was actually on that MySpace account. They didn't say anything about what kind of security was in place to stop someone else from using it. They also didn't have any other info to connect those messages to Williams's brother. It was basically just a name on a screen.
Okay, and I remember the court used a really good analogy to explain this, something about a phone call.
Oh, yeah, that's a good way to think about it. They said that a MySpace page is kind of like a phone call where you don't know who's on the other end. If someone calls you and says, hey, it's me, so-and-so, you wouldn't just automatically believe them, right?
Right.
You'd want some way to be sure it's really them. Same thing with digital stuff. You need more than just a name to link it to a real person.
That makes so much sense. So the court was basically saying, hold on, we can't just take these messages at face value.
Exactly.
So they made a mistake letting those MySpace messages in. That sounds like a pretty big deal. But then Williams was still convicted even with that error. How does that work? Isn't that where the whole harmless error thing comes in?
You got it. The court said that even though those messages shouldn't have been allowed, it was a harmless error. What that means is the mistake didn't really affect the jury's decision. The court thought there was so much other evidence against Williams, like tons of it, that those messages didn't change the outcome.
So it's like, even if the trial wasn't perfect, if there's enough evidence to convince the higher court that the mistake didn't really matter, the conviction can stay.
Right. It's not about looking for a perfect trial. It's about making sure that any mistakes didn't actually make the result unfair.
That's a really important distinction for all the future lawyers out there. It's not just about finding errors. It's about understanding their impact. Now, I know you mentioned there were a couple of other evidentiary issues in this appeal. Can we quickly go over those?
Sure. Williams, he also said that a gun, which they found on his cousin a few days after the murder, shouldn't have been allowed as evidence.
Okay.
But the court said it was fine to use it because the gun had a really specific defect that linked it back to the one they thought was used in the murder. That connection was strong enough for them.
So they had a way to tie that gun back to the crime, which made it relevant.
Exactly.
Got it.
And then there were also some claims about the judge being biased and problems with how the prosecution shared some evidence. But the court looked into all of that and said, nope, not seeing it. They said the evidence was given to the defense as soon as the prosecution had it, which is the rule, and that there was no reason to believe the judge was biased.
Okay, so they basically checked those things off the list. So we've talked about a lot here, Miranda warnings, the whole digital evidence thing, and how harmless error works. What would you say are, like, the most important things for law students to take away from Commonwealth v. Williams? What do they absolutely need to remember?
Okay, so three big things to keep in mind. Number one, when you're thinking about Miranda waivers, think about the whole situation, not just whether someone signed a form. use that totality of the circumstances test. Number two, with digital evidence, especially things like stuff from social media, you've got to make absolutely sure it's real. You need solid proof connecting it back to the person it's supposed to be from. And number three, make sure you understand how harmless error works in appeals. Not every mistake in a trial means it gets overturned. The mistake has to have really affected the final decision.
It's amazing to think that this case, it's from 2010, talking about MySpace.
Yeah.
But it's still so relevant for us today. It really shows how the law has to keep up with, like, you know, all the changes in technology and how we live our lives. It also shows how important it is to protect people's basic rights, no matter what's going on with tech.
And Commonwealth v. Williams, it's like a textbook example of how the courts take old legal ideas and apply them to these new types of evidence.
Mm-hmm.
It really highlights that the law is constantly evolving.
This complex legal stuff. Think about this. How are the rules for proving digital evidence going to change as technology keeps changing? You know, we're way past MySpace now. What about all the new platforms and ways we communicate? What are the challenges that lawyers and judges face when they're trying to make sure digital evidence is trustworthy? Cases like Williams, they give us a starting point for thinking about all of that. So keep digging, keep asking questions, and keep diving deep.
Yeah, that's the best way to learn.
All right, everyone, thanks for joining us for another Lexaplug Deep Dive. See you next time.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye.